This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer.
Back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTK.com. Sam Webb, Mr. Ira Weintraub on the other side, and a special day for the MGO Blog Roundtable. No, this is not the regular day, but we have some programming that we're working on for Thursday's show. But we could not go, a week, especially this week, without the roundtable. We got to bask in the glow. We got to talk about the physical domination of the Ohio State Buckeyes with the crew from MGO Blog. Starting off first with Brian Cook. Brian, how are you, man? How you feeling? How you doing?
Good. Good.
Feeling good over there, man?
I'm okay.
It's like, man, I wonder how Brian is feeling over there today. You got to be excited. You got to be fired up. Same thing with Seth Fisher. How you doing?
That's how good I'm doing. You notice there's no monkey on my back anymore? You notice there's like nothing like holding me down? I'm not carrying like there's no albatross up here. All I got here is my Hassan Haskins jersey, which I've been recording with every single week with you. And here I am in the Big Ten Championship. Unfortunately, I don't get to go because my wife has COVID, so we're all locked in and I've got the kids 24/7. But other than that, Sam, I am the best I have been in years.
I'm so glad. I'm glad. See, this is the Seth Fisher I want to see. Laying it down on him. Thank you. I was looking for that guy. I was looking for you, Seth. Craig Ross, now I want to give you the floor because I believe I sat up on this MGO Blog Roundtable last week and heard Craig Ross say, they can beat these guys. Didn't I hear you say that, Craig Ross? You said, they can beat these guys. They have what it takes to beat Ohio State. Didn't you say that, Craig Ross?
I did, but I can't say that I was actually predicting that or thinking that it would actually happen. I just thought there was in the words of Sam Webb, I thought we had a puncher's chance or someplace between a puncher's chance and a reasonable chance of winning. I never would have guessed that we won the game in the way that it sort of came about we threw an interception and Ohio State didn't. There were three fumbles and
Ohio State dropped an interception.
Ohio State, fumbles three times, recovers all of them. Stroud makes some unbelievable throws just right on the money with their phenomenal wide receivers. And yet Michigan still kicked the crap out of them. The offensive line just dominated that game, and Hassan Haskins dominated that game on the offensive side. And Aiden Hutchinson, who should win the Heisman, I think Brian was the first one who suggested that, who should win the Heisman Award, and I think PFF has the number one player in the country right now, just dominated it on the other side. It was remarkable to watch how much it seemed like Michigan really wanted this game and how hard they were playing and how tepid Ohio State was. And you saw, I think Brian had posted something on his site of halftime of the teams going off. And it's a one-point game. And Ohio State looks like they're going to a funeral. And the Michigan team, they're jacked.
It's such a great video because there's the line, right? There's a demarcation of referees and stuff like that stopping everybody. So like Ohio State, they're walking in, their heads are a little bit down. They're going to work. Yeah. And then there's a line and then there's just this mass of Michigan players.
Hey man, listen, I don't know about you guys, but I didn't think that this defense that Ohio State that they put on the field and call a defense was much of anything. They aren't coached very well. I can tell you that. You just watch them on the field. And you can see it in their plan. What's their defensive plan? Score 1,000 points. Score 1,000 points, and you guys just go out there and play. And they paid for it. Because when it came time to stand up at the end of the game, you got to close the game out by getting a stop, Ohio State defense. And what happened? Michigan plowed down the field. And then Ryan Day said, we let them score on that because we had to get the ball. It looked the same.
Nonsense.
It looked the same every play along the way on that drive. They got physically dominated and they quit. And it makes you, to me, as you look at the buildup to this game this season, now you see what it was all about, guys. It was about this game. Someone somewhere knew that if we establish the run, we can pound these guys. That is what you got to do against Ohio State.
You know, to me, the thing that is the wildest is that they walk into that stadium and they're shook, like, from the drop. Like, Michigan goes right down the field to score a touchdown. What do? They fail the fair catch of the kickoff, and then Stroud's trying to make a protection call, and they snap it into his knees, and that's how they start the game. And they have a ton of talent, and those wide receivers balled out. But anything other than that, as soon as they got some momentum, like, they'd have a false start or they'd have a holding call. And then on defense, that last drive was one of the most boggling things I've ever seen. That is a four-minute drill. You're in a 4-2-5 with two deep safeties. What are you thinking? You haven't been able to stop Hassan Askins all day. Those safeties need to have their nose on an offensive lineman at the snap, and they're just hanging back in a cover two shell. And the Haskins run right before Michigan scores, they line up with everybody to the right side of Michigan's center, and then the offensive and then the defensive line slants to their run strength. As soon as Hassan Haskins gets the second level, there is no second level. So we can talk about physically dominating them, but I think it was mental. Like, I think they walked into this game and Ohio State got punched in the mouth and like, but we put up 49 points in the first half against Michigan State, and they fell apart. Like, this is they just didn't have it, like, mentally, and they were making mistakes all day. And Michigan doesn't give up a tackle for loss. They have one play that doesn't gain yards on the ground, and that's when they tried to go tempo, and they're not very good at tempo. But everything else, like, you know, they fixed their short yardage by going more pistol and getting Hassan Haskins more vertical. They had the flea flicker. They had the Statue of Liberty end around. They brought it to this game, and except for JSN getting, like, isolated on David Ojabo that one time, Ohio State didn't have anything. I mean, they didn't have that drive, you know, that drive that you prepare all year that we call the July drive when Michigan State does it. And Michigan had a ton of that stuff. And for whatever reason, they were nuking guys this year, but they came to this game and they didn't have anything. They hadn't prepped it.
What we've seen, guys, the last two times these squads played, and they were games at halftime. We talked about this, right? They came out and Ohio State ran away with it. Whatever adjustment they made, whatever button they pushed, they dropped a bomb on Michigan coming out of the locker room. And they thought they were going to do the same thing this time. And Michigan comes out, gets a three and out. Then they score in three plays. It's a different day. And I just don't think that in this Ohio State defense wasn't going to have answers. I mean, say what you want about Kerry Combs. He at least would have had some alternatives. They really simplified and just said, guys, go play. And there was nothing they could do to answer. They just didn't have the answers from a coaching perspective. And that issue was compounded by guys just quitting on the football field.
So Ohio State's preparation for this game, what Ohio State brought from this game, which we hadn't seen from them before, was a lot of six-man, seven-man, five-man pressures. And they used their linebackers more in blitzing, which is something they did in 2019 as well. Which, have you watched Michigan at all this year? Who's Michigan's quarterback? It's Cade McNamara. What does Cade McNamara do? He likes to see who his read is and get his first read out. What do you give him when you blitz like that? You give him his first read, right? Like the game plan that Ohio State had on defense was like the only stuff that they prepared that was exotic. I think they got Michigan off the field twice. And Michigan had two punts this entire game, and both times was because those pressures got up the middle, right? So twice all that preparation, all the things that Ohio State prepared for this game, all the exotics, all the things that they did that were any different than they've done in previous games, they got Michigan off the field twice. That was it.
Well, yeah, and then
you know, Michigan runs one stretch play in this game, and that's the 55-yarder for Corum. I have probably graded more stretch plays than anything else in the history of MGO blog because that's all Mike DeBoer did. That was a lot of what Rich Rodriguez did. I have seen stretch plays for days, and I know when you have a one technique and then you have a guy in a seven, that if that nose tackle gets reached, you're dead meat. And that's the first thing that happens on that play is he goes straight upfield, and then Steel Chambers on the backside doesn't know what he's looking at. It's a stretch play. It's one of the like fundamental plays in football. They run a stretch play. He sits there and he stands and just eats a block the whole play. He doesn't know what is going on. So I don't know how this team, like after the Oregon game, if you look at their stats, nobody could run on them. Absolutely nobody could run on them. And I guess that's just because their offense was so powerful that people gave it up. But like even on a yards per carry basis, nobody could do anything against them except like Nebraska. Nebraska has an option quarterback and all that stuff. So they were doing something right. And then they fell apart in this game. And then on the other side of the ball, those running backs were averaging 7 yards a carry. And Michigan was not helping their defensive tackles, right? You got a couple linebackers, but you know that you had that zero blitz at the end of the third quarter. But that's it. Michigan was staying back, making Ohio State drive the field. And except for one tempo play, they rushed for under 3 yards a carry. I defy anyone to say that they predicted that.
I certainly didn't predict that they would beat them so handily. Didn't predict they would beat them and predicted that this formula would be how it was done. And that, you know, the play, the stretch play that you bring up, it was interesting to me because I think it illustrated just how limited they were to think on it, Ohio State's defense is when it comes to thinking on their feet. There was an RPO attached to it. And I asked Jack this. It's like, it doesn't look like he ever really had any intent. He wasn't really reading the RPO portion of it. He said, yeah, he could see on the snap based on, like you just said, he knew he was going to give this ball. And Ohio State, they were standing in quicksand. They were standing in quicksand on the play. And they were on so many times in that game, you would see guys be so wildly out of position. I think it was the second touchdown that Michigan scored. I think it was a counter. It was. And
the Haskins,
their defensive end is like, what is he doing? What is he doing? What is he doing?
There are two pullers coming to him and he dives inside both of them. So nobody has to block him. I was like, what do you think is going to happen when guys pull to you? And you're the force player. What are we doing?
It was like, you saw plays like that, man. It's like, these guys aren't well coached. They are well coached right now.
And you remember who their linebackers coach is. I wonder if Michigan didn't dodge a bullet there.
See, I thought their biggest issues were up front. I thought their biggest issues were up front, not sound fundamentally out. At the same time, I mean, did the linebackers contribute to that? I think their issue became that, man, the linemen were getting running shots at those guys. Like the defensive line became non-existent in this game. And that was another thing that was confounding to me. The teams that have done the best job of holding up against Michigan's run are the ones that give you a lot of movement. Get that line moving. I'm not trying to give a scouting report on Michigan, but you know, a lot of slants, a lot of twists, moving targets. Rutgers did that. We saw Indiana do some of that. These guys, they did a little of that. But for the most part, they gave Michigan a stationary target, said, come get us. And Michigan said, okay, all day long. All day long, they came and got him in that last drive, Ryan Day. That last drive. I challenge you to show me the difference between trying and letting. You're trying to stop Michigan here, but you're letting them score here. They look the same, guys. Yeah.
So we've trashed the coaching at the defensive line level and the linebacker level. Let me just get to the secondary. So Ohio State's star corner lined up in press coverage on Cordelius Johnson and then didn't touch him. It's called press for a reason. You're supposed to touch the guy. You're supposed to jam the guy. And so Cordelius Johnson just runs by the dude and it's like, all right, here's a free fly route. And Michigan gets down to the two and they score it off that. So whatever decisions Ryan Day made in the offseason were not good ones.
He's going to broom that staff.
Except
for Al. He won't broom Al, but he'll broom the rest of them, I think.
Well, I mean, the thing is that he had an opportunity to get Marcus Freeman. And he doesn't have that anymore because Marcus Freeman is going to be head coach. So, like, he had a decision to make, and he went with Kerry Coombs, who even Ohio State fans know is just a recruiter. And then, you know, you have this disastrous start to the season. You put him in the kiddie pool, and you don't have anyone to replace him with. So,
yeah, I'm sure Kerry Coombs is saying, I could have done a better job than that. This time. Like, yeah, you sent me, you made me get coffee for this. I could do a better job than that. It was, hey, man.
Come on, Sam. Coombs did a great job carrying those sandwiches in the press box the other day.
I swear, I never thought I'd see Ohio State quit in this game. They quit. That last drive, it's a one-score game, 35-27. And that front seven wanted none of that smoke. None of it. None. Go watch the tape. We did it this morning. They were not. It was ole to the secondary the whole time down the field. And you let them score right. Come on, bro. Come on, bro. Stop it. Stop it. And then let them do a damn thing.
You know, the second half, Dad, and I think Brian pointed this out in his article, is pretty remarkable. I think Michigan only ran 21 plays and had four touchdowns in 21 plays. Could that be right? And, I believe Michigan only threw four passes in the second half.
Yeah, they only threw four passes, and they only had one passing down. So, like, a passing down, you know, like second and 10, it was the only one. Mm-hmm. So they had no third and longs whatsoever. The only one time they were not on schedule the entire second half. I mean, this was the Michigan version of what Ohio State did to Michigan State. We just did what we wanted to do, and we did what we were best at, and they could not stop it. And then we got the ball back and we did it again. And then we got the ball back and we did it again. And they made some incredible plays to stay in that game. But this game was so close to being 75-0. There's so many things that, like, Michigan was doing right. Even when they got booted off the field, even when they had, like, a three and out, one of them, they're in the shadow of their own goalpost, so they run a couple times into stack boxes. And then they throw to Edwards, and Edwards is, like, that close to bringing it in on the sideline. And, like, so there was no point, and I'm doing the UFR, there's no point in there where I'm like, oh, man, they got us. Or, like, oh, that's not something we can try again. That's going to be shut off. I mean, I've been doing Rutgers, and, like, they shut us down, right? I saw, like, what Wisconsin did, and we had a success against Wisconsin, but they were doing smart things, and they had some great players who were really shutting down our tight ends. There was nothing. There was not a single thing that I was looking at here except for some of their blitzes where I was like, man, Ohio State had something good there. Everything else was falling apart.
Well, and then on the other side of the ball, like, so Michigan runs 21 plays, and Ohio State's offense is out there for 17 play drives because they got to convert on fourth down, and they got to convert on third and 19. And if JSN doesn't make the catch of the year, maybe in the Big Ten, like, they're punting on that drive, or they're going on fourth and 19, and then they have a fourth and seven they managed to convert. They have a fourth and four they managed to convert. You know, Alex talked about this on our podcast where it's like, this is a team that's going to get 500 yards. And what you need to be able to do is you need to be able to shut them down once they get in the red zone. And Michigan forces two field goals in the first half. And if Michigan wasn't up 15 points in the second half, they probably would have forced a couple more. So they did that. They bent and they didn't break except when it got to fourth down and ridiculous catches that they were making. And that was all they had, right?
What about the job that Mike McDonald did in this game? And what about the day that Aiden Hutchinson had? I know PFF said he's the number one player in the draft. Didn't say it after weeks. Been telling the Lions, don't outthink the room. I know people say, oh, why would you do that to Aiden? I'm a Lions fan. And he's the top pick. He's the best player in the country.
Do you really want to do that to Aiden Hutchinson? Don't you?
I really do.
He's our guy, man. You want to doom him to being a Lion?
I don't. That is, no. You can't do that.
He could be the difference. Their issue is
the difference for the Lions.
Like Sue was the difference.
Is he going to block 65-yard field goals?
Yes, he will.
He is not going to block 65-yard field goals.
You know their problem. They don't take Michigan guys. That's their problem.
That's not their problem. What do you mean their problem? As if there's one problem.
Their biggest problem.
He will go to the Lions, and he will be Sue. He will be Johnson. He will be Stafford. He will be Barry Sanders.
We could have had Brian Griese. We could have had Lamar Woodley. We could have had David Harris. We could have had. We could have had. We could have had Devin. I mean, I was like, man, we sitting here. We drafted in a. Come on, Ira, killing me. T.J. Hockenson, still, man. Still. Don't even get me started.
You got yourself started, Sam. Bring it back to Michigan.
The Michigan guy. But anyway, Aiden had just an epic performance in this game, which is the highlight defensively. But the plan, I really thought that if you watch C.J. Stroud, and Harbaugh talked about this after the game. Jim said, man, he thought he was seeing one thing, and we would give him another. Great job of disguise by Mike McDonald in this game.
Yeah, I mean, they had so many 5-yard, 6-yard, 7-yard passes, and they didn't hit anything deep that wasn't covered. You know, like they hit Garrett Wilson deep, but Vincent Gray is right there. And if I was absolutely shocked by the way Vincent Gray and DJ Turner performed in this game, because everything that their receivers had to get that was longer than 5 yards was contested in ways that I simply did not expect. So, and then, I mean, there should have been a pop fly interception, but Moten drops it, and and like Stroud's getting pressure half the time, and his reaction to pressure is not what Cade McNamara does. Like Cade McNamara got pressure, stepped into a throw, hit Andrew Anthony for a 93-yard touchdown against Michigan State, and CJ Stroud throws off his back foot and he throws loopers. And Michigan, there were a lot of balls that sailed because he wasn't stepping in. There was that near interception. They got a couple completions off it. But the combination of Stroud's reaction to pressure and Michigan's defensive ends was fatal.
Man, I talked about this. I mean, you saw it again in Nebraska, again, a little bit of Penn State, but really at Nebraska, there was a play where they brought a wheel dog blitz, and it got in his face, and the dude just threw it up. Mm-hmm. He threw it in a double coverage. It's like, man, what is he doing? He just pressure. Michigan moved him off his spot. We kind of moved him off the spot 15 times. Rushed his throw another 15 times. He was not ready for that. He was not ready. Still made some throws. Give him credit. Great receivers. He has them. But this was more work than they thought they were going to have to do offensively.
No, when does Ohio State score a touchdown on 17 plays like their army?
Well, I mean, you look at this performance and you say, like, all right, two major things I saw on defense. One, this is why you got Mike McDonald, right? You wanted that Ravens defense that has been slaughtering, and we talked about this in our podcast, it's just been slaughtering young quarterbacks. That's what the Ravens defense does. They just give you horrible looks. They put you under on a timer. They get you off your feet. And then you've got to figure out who they left open. And it's, you know, it's a defense that gets beat by good quarterbacks in the NFL. But it's not a defense that gets beat by young quarterbacks in the NFL. And Alex made an astute observation. He said this guy is more Dwayne Haskins than anything else. Like, he is, he's great. When he stands in the pocket, he's going to be completely dead-on accurate. You get him off his feet. Part of the trick of that, and this is the trick with the Ravens, and this is also the trick with Michigan, and this is why the rest of the Big Ten can't look at this tape and go, oh, we can do that. Aiden Hutchinson. Aiden Hutchinson is the reason why you have access to that kind of pressure. Pro Football Focus said they had 15 pressures, which was the record. That they've never charted a guy who's generated 15 pressures in a single game before. That is why he's the number one on their board. And he, I mean, most outstanding player in college football. If you have any definition other than the one that is written on the trophy, I don't know what we're doing here.
Yes. Well, I mean, I he's in third on the Heisman voting list, and like, are they going to vote for C.J. Stroud now? I don't think you can vote for C.J. Stroud. And if Bama goes down to Georgia, you can't give the Heisman to an Alabama quarterback who doesn't even get his team to the playoff. You know what a layup that is? If you're a Heisman-winning quarterback, Bama's in the playoff. Can't do that. And so, like, it's Aiden Hutchinson.
Well, and the other thing is you can't watch Bryce Young and think he's at the same level, he's playing at the same level that Aiden Hutchinson is. I mean, that's a joke. I mean, Young is playing at the same level of Blaine Gabbert, not Aiden Hutchinson. And so I don't know who gets the Heisman, but I mean, they don't tend to give it to defensive ends ever.
Yeah. Shouldn't Jared and Hutchinson be the two finalists? Just leave everybody else home. Just let the two best defensive players this year, because no offensive player deserves it.
You know, maybe if Michigan is undefeated, and Aiden has a touchdown on his resume too. Maybe this wouldn't be as much of a discussion.
Maybe we can get the Big Ten to write a letter, because they've already admitted that that was a touchdown. So if they write a nice letter to the Downtown Athletic Club saying, we screwed up, Michigan actually won that game, and sorry, we botched that.
Yeah, that touchdown that went right over his hand, I was like, for a lot of reasons, because if he picks that off, ball game.
Yeah, it's
ball
a moment,
game for
right?
the Heisman.
It's a moment. That's
right. I was like, oh, he's going to pick this off. He's going to return it for a touchdown, and he's going to do the Desmond Howard in the end zone. And I was like, so close.
Yeah, look, now the greatest defensive end to play at Michigan, set the sack record, dominated the Ohio State game. It has just been a fantastic, and has led this team. Got to give a shout out to Josh Ross too. He had himself a heck of a day. And you know, we talked a lot about the offensive performance, and Ira's giving me the break sign. But man, the game that Josh Gattis put together from the opening drive on was, that's the stuff that gets you remembered. That's the stuff that gets you a head coaching job. That's the stuff that get. I thought it was going to be the Virginia Tech job. And they went with the Penn State guy.
So the Penn State DC is a Frank Beamer guy. He's got ties to Virginia Tech. So they went with one of their own.
Man, bro.
And their AD is a big Virginia Tech guy. So they were not surprised that they kept it within the Hokie family.
So we got to talk some Iowa guys. I don't know how deep you've gotten into the Iowa scout. I know you're probably still working on UFR.
Yeah,
Seth,
yeah.
But,
oh, yeah.
But,
I'm working on family right now. I've got we're on cartoon time right now, and that's not going to last much longer.
At least some cursory observations of Iowa on the other side. And then, of course, we got to talk about the bedlam that is the coaching carousel in college football. It is just bananas what's going on across the country right now. We'll get to all of that and more. We'll return here on the Michigan Insider, a special edition of the MGO Blog Roundtable. As more MGO Blog Roundtable on the other side here on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, The Ticket.
You said we're going to talk bedlam. I was like, we're going to talk bedlam?
Bedlam ensued as Brian Kelly left South Bend without even talking to his coaches. Without even telling his coaches.
Hey, Sam, before we dive into that, how about this one from Nathan? You want to get Hutch some more notice?
Oh, yeah, come on. Yeah. When is the Heisman awarded?
The 11th, I think. They're announcing like the finalists on like the 9th and the 8th, and then the winner.
So if he has a big championship game, let's say he comes out with another 3-sack day or something like that, you dominate the championship game too.
Yeah, and I think it's. I mean, Alabama's got to lose to Georgia and hopefully like get absolutely murdered.
I am so sick of offensive players winning this. I mean, Woodson should have left. It should have been over after Woodson won it, because it says most outstanding player. And there's a lot of players who play college football, and everyone knows there's one trophy. I mean, you can't say that there's like another trophy, like Defensive Player of the Year is going to be like, that is not the same thing, right? There is one trophy for the most outstanding player in college football. I was really mad when Sue didn't win it. It was obvious who the best player in football was that year.
Yeah.
I mean, the problem probably is, Seth, is that the people who are doing the voting don't really see very many of the players, is my guess. And, you know, they might look at some stats. They might look at, okay, here's the best quarterback on the best team, or it's pretty easy to look at, you know, a quarterback from a team who's being incredibly successful, or a great running back from a team that's being very successful. But they're not really looking at the games that carefully. And so you can't expect a sort of high quality vote. It seems to me that you need to change the voters until you.
That we would have by now moved beyond Johnny Lujack. Like, let's just see who's the quarterback.
Johnny Lujack
in Notre Dame
was a mistake. Well, you're right. Johnny Lujack was a blown Heisman. No, had no right winning the Heisman.
But the reason why he won that is because the writers didn't watch any games. They looked to see who was Notre Dame's quarterback. They even looked to see Notre Dame's record was, and they just gave it to that guy. And for some reason, we're still doing this. We're still like, oh, quarterback is the drama position. Like, C.J. Stroud, not a bad player, but Brian's right. You cannot give him the Heisman after you saw what just happened. You saw him put under pressure. You saw what he
did. What I don't understand is why there isn't the national push for this like there was Thibodeau at the beginning of the season. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were national writers all over. Thibodeau should be, he's the best player in the country. He needs to be in the Heisman race. I mean, they tried to talk him into it. He's an exceptional talent. Take nothing away, but Aiden Hutchinson's better. Aiden Hutchinson is a more all-around player than Kayvon Thibodeau.
No doubt.
Yeah. Playing on a better, and also playing on a more consequential team this year, at least.
Yeah, he is a pass rusher.
Yeah.
A pass rusher and a pass rusher. That's not Aiden Hutchinson is more than that. Aiden Hutchinson, if everything goes according to plan, man, guys, I think we're watching J.J. Watt. That's who I think we're watching. I think we're watching J.J. Watt. And I don't want the Lions to pass on J.J. Watt. Come on, Lions. Come on, man. Don't pass on J.J. Watt. That way he's right around the corner. It's the easiest kind of job.
Coming back on radio momentarily.
All right, here we go. So Iowa. We owe these cats. The Iowa in the grand scheme of things. And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider. So I was just saying to my MGO blog roundtable brothers that when you think back to what has the games that haunt Jim Harbaugh the most, I mean, every coach has those losses that he's like, oh, my God. I mean, people would probably say Ohio State in the yard, right? That's one that's going to live in infamy for all of us. But I got to believe it's Iowa. Gotta believe it's Iowa in 2016 because
I disagree. I mean, like that felt bad to let it go, but I mean, is Michigan in the playoffs if they still lose to Ohio State in that game?
Yes, they are. If they beat Iowa, yes, they're still in the playoff. I think they still make it. If the game, let's say they lose the game, the Ohio State game by a yard.
Yeah.
And that's their only loss. Yes, they're a playoff team.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair
enough. But they not only lost to Iowa, they lost Wilton Spate. And so Wilton Spate gets an Ohio State game. He can't throw the ball down the field. So, I mean, that game, you could say, in part, cost them the Ohio State game, too. That was one of the reasons why maybe Michigan didn't have a bigger cushion in that. It just, Iowa is the thorn in the side. Can they be, Brian Cook, the thorn in the side again this year? Do you think they're capable of doing that?
I mean, never say never, but if you look at this offense and what they've done, I have a hard time seeing them scoring 20 points in this game. Like they were able to beat Iowa State because they had a ton of turnover. Look, they were down 21-6 to Nebraska late in that game against Nebraska.
21-9, wasn't it?
21-9, and yeah. Against Nebraska's backup quarterback, and they managed to pull that one out of their butt. You know, they were getting trashed by Penn State and then Clifford goes out. Like I don't want to disrespect this Iowa team, but this is probably one of the weaker West champs we've seen. And that includes those Northwestern teams. Like
they can't pass pro. They're
no,
this is so weird for an Iowa team that they have major pass protection. Their center is the best. Their center is the best center in the country. And that's what their offense is really based out of. But I mean, they got a great running back and they got a great center, but they can't pass protect. So, I mean, you're going to go up against Aiden Hutchinson and David Ojabo with those guys. You're going to get Penn Stated.
Yeah. The last six games from Iowa, well, after I guess the last seven counting Penn State, where they didn't really play well until the quarterback at Penn State got hurt, but they lose to Purdue 24-7. They lose to Wisconsin 27-7. Then they barely sneak by Northwestern in a 17-12 in a game that's even. Minnesota is a sneak by 27-22 in a game where Minnesota outgains them by 140 yards. Illinois outgains them, but they beat Illinois by 10. And then Nebraska is an even game where they come back being down 21-9 and win 28-21. That's the end of their season. The last seven games. And really, there's nothing in there that's particularly impressive, except for the fact that they do play solid defense, same old at Iowa, and they do win turnovers.
And
special teams.
Yeah.
So that's sort of the Iowa difference or the Iowa theory, that we will not beat ourselves. We'll play good defense and we'll look slow and sluggish on offense, but it won't matter because we're never ever going to beat ourselves and we're going to let you beat yourself. That's what I see.
Honestly, this reminds me of the Brady Hoke, the first year he was here, and they had just had a horseshoe up their butt the whole year. They beat Iowa State by gaining 173 yards.
Is that right? I didn't look at that.
Yeah.
Iowa State's number. They beat Iowa State every year.
But they got outgained 2-1 in that game. And so what are we talking about here when it comes to Michigan? Well, we're talking about, all right, don't lose special teams. Iowa has the second best special teams unit in America. Number one is Michigan, yeah. Right? So that game we were talking about in 2016 turned because Michigan got absolutely hammered on special teams. And that's probably not going to happen in this game. And then the other thing is just don't turn the ball over a million times. And Michigan doesn't give up pass pressures, right? And their running backs don't fumble the ball. So the pass for Iowa to win don't really look like their particular weaknesses of Michigan. So
they don't overlook them, right?
Yeah, I'm not going to overlook someone in the Big Ten championship game, but the thing that they need to do is just don't beat themselves, and Iowa isn't going to have the horsepower to stay with Michigan.
Yeah, man.
I mean, do you think Michigan can run the ball against Iowa? I mean, they've got a pretty stout run defense. Or is Michigan going to have to sort of change and throw against the weakness of that team, which I think
Iowa
is not
like
super fast?
Iowa is well coached up front, but they're a lot like us, where they went into the season kind of wondering what's going on with their tackles, and then their tackles put in a really good year for them. So, I mean, I don't know if they've really, I don't know if those guys have given up a whole lot of yards to anybody yet, but they don't bring their safeties down very much. Like Michigan, I think it's just a really bad matchup for Iowa.
Yeah, and Craig, I mean, you've watched this team all year, right? You see what they do, right? Yeah. It's not changing. How they do what they do is not changing. Now, can they tweak it and throw a little more? Sure. But they're going to ride Hassan Haskins, who I think we need to take a moment. I mean, we talked a lot about Aiden Hutchinson, and give that man, Hassan Haskins, his due. I do not think it's hyperbole to call him one of the best backs to do it in a Michigan uniform. He's not as fast as some of the guys or as quick as some of the other guys that we've seen. But man, you talk about production. You talk about being a guy who you can ride. You talk about being a guy who a couple years ago, we dissected that pin and pull where he didn't follow his blockers. We talked about that up the wazoo. But what I remember more than that is that he was still playing. He showed that day me everything I needed to see about what he is, who he is as a player. And so it was fitting that he came back around the next time he played Ohio State and stuffed it down their throats, and to me established himself as one of the best guys to run the rock for the University of Michigan. I'm curious what you guys think.
Well, I think Seth and I have been on the Hassan Haskins bandwagon forever. And in my case, I mean, I've said a lot of stupid things on this show, and I've said a lot of things that are wrong. But the one thing I recall saying that was right was when Michigan recruited Haskins, I looked at their tape, at his tape. Why are we recruiting this guy who's not in the top 1,000 in the country? And I said, he's better than the other guy we got in this class. And I think that was Charbonnet. And I mean, he's better than the other guy because I looked at that tape and I was.
Charbonnet was the next class. Charbonnet was the next class. Turner was.
Okay, maybe it was the other guy. Well, maybe it wasn't Charbonnet, but I said this guy is the deal. I mean, he's playing defensive end on defense. He's just a monster playing behind a terrible offensive line in high school, and I loved him from minute one, and I know that. Everyone sees now how good he is. And if you were going to pick a Heisman award and you said, hey, it's Hassan Haskins, I'd say, okay. Yeah, I'd say, okay. That's not a mistake.
Yeah.
I mean, not just his running, but his pass blocking, his intelligence on the field, his never gives up ever.
All season, I thought this was a hell of a stat.
Yeah.
Only three times this season has that dude been hit for a loss. Three times this season. Some guys have that in a game.
And they were all in tempo, and they were all in short situations. Yeah, I looked that up too. They were all tempo and short situations. Never once on a real play. I mean, they got to him in the backfield. You know, let me say my piece on Haskins again.
Yeah.
Like Craig, I liked the tape originally. Like Brian, who was grading him earlier in his career, I was like, yeah, this guy is so much better. I'd be a Sanuka. I love it. I love it. After he was grading out so much better than the other Michigan running backs, and Charbonnet in particular, like Brian called it at that point too. So everyone's got that point where they said, this guy is a player. This guy is a star. And I think that a lot of Michigan fans have been there. When I took it to the went for the next level, when you like, this guy is one of the greats, that like number 25 is a number that you're going to remember like number 20, like you're going to remember like number 2, like you're going to remember like 97, right? He's one of those guys. For me, that moment was I went back and I UFR'd, I charted the Michigan State game from last year because it was one of the ones that we'd missed in the process of COVID and whatnot, and I was going to be doing UFR this year, so I needed practice and I needed the stats for the book. And you remember how low your fandom got this winter. Everyone got there, right? We went 2-4. We weren't sure we were ever going to beat Ohio State again. Mm-hmm. Our best joke was that, like, you know, our third string quarterback would have won. And I'm watching this tape, and he is hurdling dudes, and he is just fighting for every single yard in this horrible Michigan State game where they can just toss the ball over our cornerbacks whenever they want to. And Hassan Haskins is keeping us in it. And every single time there's like a bad moment, it's 2nd and 10, and we're running the ball, and you're like, oh no, oh yes, this guy pulled me out. And that, Brian called it beep home before, but like, I was there. I was totally there. I was making fun, and I was making soup jokes, and I was doing it all, that's with everybody else. What pulled me back into like that Michigan fandom, that thing where you like get emotionally attached to everything that goes on in a Michigan football game, was Hassan Haskins. And I was like, I bought his jersey this summer. I grabbed onto him and let him pull me out of that. And I mean, look where he pulled us. Look where he got us. Man,
I'm so happy to see you guys happy. I'm happy Michigan won, but I'm happy to see my fellas happy. I'm happy to see a smile on Brian Cook's face. And listen to that. So
I
now
smile.
So now
staring off into the abyss right now.
I gave a smile. It was an hour ago or 40 minutes ago, but it lasts. I mean, the memory lasts in my mind. Guys, Michigan wins on Saturday. Michigan's in the playoff. And probably, do we think they're facing Oklahoma State?
Depends. I mean, those
Cincinnati, I would guess.
Cincinnati.
So we all know that the SEC champ is the number one. If Georgia wins, they're one, and then Alabama's out. If Alabama wins, they're one. Georgia's two. Michigan's three. Right. But if we go with Georgia winning, they're one. Michigan's two. Do you think Oklahoma State? I think Oklahoma State jumps Cincinnati when they beat a better opponent than Cincinnati plays this week, and then Oklahoma State's number three. Plus, the committee likes to do things like putting Oklahoma State in Dallas, which is where that game's going to be. So I probably want to do Georgia a favor and give them Cincinnati. That's just why I think it's going to happen.
The location, you could put that game in Oklahoma State's home stadium, and it'll be 75% Michigan fans.
Good point.
That's true. Brian Cook. Welcome back, Brian Cook. Welcome back, baby. That's what I'm talking about.
Just facts, guys. Facts.
So then, again, not to get too far ahead of ourselves, but Michigan, a national title contender. Now, they got a Big Ten championship to win first. But if they win the Big Ten championship, this team could win a national championship. Have you taken the time to process how unlikely you thought that that statement would be at the beginning of the season and actually have it here now? This team could really be a threat. If they get by, I'm giving Iowa their credit and their due. If they get by Iowa, this team could do it.
Yeah, I mean, they're fortunate in that this isn't a year where you've got like a death machine Clemson and Alabama and Georgia all in the playoff, right? Like if Georgia wins this game, the playoff field is going to have three teams in it that have never been in it before. And all due respect to Cincinnati or Oklahoma State, those are good teams, but I'd much rather play one of those two teams than the Alabama team that Michigan State played, right? And I mean, they'll earn their way away from having to do that in the first round because they won't be the number four seed. But yeah, get a group of five team. Yeah, let's do that.
George, let me tell you something, Sam. Georgia is Wisconsin in an easier division. That's what they are. They've got some great defensive players, but they're playing in the weak SEC East. They played like all these nobody teams. Now, they've been killing them. But let me tell you what Georgia is, okay? Georgia, Georgia has ridiculous... Georgia's offense is nothing. Georgia's defense is incredible. Georgia has an incredible, incredible defense. And that I'm not saying that out of disrespect for Georgia. I'm saying that out of respect for Wisconsin's players. Okay? But Wisconsin...
How did they lose to Minnesota, by the way?
Because the quarterback is terrible.
Anyway, I didn't mean to disrupt your thought.
Yeah, no. But like, what Georgia is Georgia's got a ridiculous defensive line. And that nose tackle is just... If he wins the Heisman, that's fine. I'm fine with that happening too. And then they got four linebackers behind it. So like, how does Michigan, you know, how does Michigan run their stuff against that? That's a bad matchup for Michigan if we do face Georgia, because the things that we do require us to move defensive tackles and get to linebackers, and that's going to be really hard against Georgia. So I don't want to count that out, but I want to give Georgia some like they're going to be a tough out. I don't think that they're, like Brian says, they're not a juggernaut because they don't have an offense like some of the offenses that we've seen in the playoffs in the previous years.
So you seem to disagree with something Seth said there, Brian.
You're talking about an undefeated Georgia team that is going to be a heavy favorite over Alabama, has a historic defense. I just don't want Seth to end up on every message board in the South. I'm just trying to help them out here.
They're not listening to Michigan radio. The words that we use in the first half hour of this segment just made every single person in the South turn off. They're not going to find us.
They're not reading books. They got to do something.
How do these musical chairs wind up? Not a Lincoln Riley is at SC, and Brian Kelly under the cover of night went to LSU. What winds up happening? Who goes where? Is Luke Fickell on his way out of Cincinnati? What gives, guys?
Well, I mean, Fickell's headed towards a playoff berth, and if Notre Dame wants him, they're going to have to wait. That's what I would do. Devout Catholic, really good football coach. Yeah, you're going to have a bad transition class. But with the portal these days, like I don't know why you would do anything else.
Well, Notre Dame will have some. Has a lot of the portal issues that I think Michigan has, though.
That's true.
I mean, they may get some grad transfers, but it's not going to be quite as easy for them on this transition as it would be difficult for Michigan or Northwestern or Stanford, as opposed to Michigan State, they don't care. I think Fickell's the next head coach at Notre Dame. And I think he'll probably do fine there, but they may have a transitional year issue.
I think
Marcus Freeman goes to Cincinnati as the head coach.
Yeah,
that seems right.
Yeah,
Marcus Freeman goes to Notre Dame.
They're going to play Michigan again because Fickell hates Michigan.
What are you saying, Brian?
So Marcus Freeman's being talked about as a candidate at Notre Dame. Because, I mean, he's recruiting like a maniac. That's a great defense. He's young. I mean, he's going to be head coach somewhere. Like, there's too many open jobs for him not to get one.
Yeah, yeah. I can't imagine that they would pass on Fickell for a first-time head coach. So.
The only thing that would be is like a panic move because they don't want to wait. Mm-hmm. Like, they need to get on the phone with Fickell and get a yes or no and then just wait it out.
Yeah. All right, fellas. It has been real. I mean, you guys making a trip to Indy?
I don't think so. There's like a home hockey series against Minnesota, which is going to be amazing. So I think I'm going to just stick around
and watch it. Hey, man,
game. You're going to watch the football game.
Brian Cook happy, man.
Don't get ahead of yourself. Don't get ahead of yourself.
I'm going to Dallas. Wife and I will be in Dallas. We're staying for the Friday night hockey game. And
he said, Dallas, man,
we applied for tickets for Dallas too. So we put our application in for Dallas and we did get tickets for the Iowa game. And we're going to drive on Saturday after going to the hockey game Friday night. We will miss San Diego. basketball, which bothers me, and I'll have to tape whatever I can tape. But
all right, well, hey man, if you any of you who are making the trip to Indianapolis, we'll see you down there. We got to get out of here, though, folks. We are over time. Fellas, thanks once again this week for accommodating us. Can't go a week without the round table. We can help it, and you guys made it work, so I appreciate that. We got to get out of here. Back tomorrow on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050, WTK, The Ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports, Ann Arbor, a Cumulus station.
To be a Michigan Wolverine is great.